My microphone on? It is now. I didn't even touch it. It's amazing. I think it's artificial intelligence because I don't really have much of my own, so I need all the help I can get. Anyway, I'm glad you're here. I'm Rusty, pastor here at New Hope, and whether you're on campus, online, or later in the week on demand, I'm glad we have the tools that we can be together. I know a lot of people are traveling this summer, and it's neat to be able to stay even virtually connected to each other. I want to tell you, earlier this week, I was in Abingdon, Virginia, which is near Bristol, which is way, way out there. I mean, it's about as close as you can get to Tennessee, I guess, and still be in Virginia. And I was meeting where there was a group of these people. They're called Field Strategists. There's an organization we support that helps about 1,500 churches in the state of Virginia. And these field strategists, each of them have an area that they come alongside to try to encourage and support churches that are in that region. Most of them have probably 150 churches that they work with. And so over a meal Tuesday night, I was asked one of them, I said, several of them, but actually this one in particular, he echoed what the other said. So what are the biggest troubles you're seeing with churches? Two things. One is they're in serious decline, and a lot of them have trouble finding pastors. About 25 to maybe 30% of the guys I talked to said of their churches don't have pastors, don't have leadership, and they can't find them. The last 4 or 5 years has just made it really hard in leadership, and so these churches are kind of floundering. He said, but there's a worse problem than that. And I said, what's that? He goes, we just got to teach them to love each other. You know, you don't want to walk into an environment where nobody likes each other. You can tell it pretty quick. You can walk into a home and tell where there's conflict, walk into a church, a business, and you know, oh, these people don't really like each other. I don't want to be a part of that. So he's saying what they're having to learn, and we're trying our best to help them, is to learn just if you can learn to love each other, then you can be welcoming and opening to a pastor that might want to come or people that might want to check you out. But if you're not, people are going to stay away in droves, and that's what's happening. And it's happening throughout the country. This just happens to be what I saw in Virginia. I want to listen, with that backdrop, listen to this. Jesus said to his church, he goes, so now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. I'm going to repeat that part. He didn't say feel loving. He didn't say hang out with people that are just like you and y'all can get along. He said, listen to it. He goes, love each other just as I have loved you. You should love each other. And it'd be an interesting study to think, so how has Jesus shown his love for me? And then to look at that and say, so what are the lessons I have here and how I'm going to learn to love the people around me? He goes, your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples, or it will prove to them that this Christian stuff is just a waste of time. I added that last part. The world is watching to see what we offer. And if we don't offer anything different than what the rest of the world has, why would anyone want to spend time with us? God has designed you and me. We're doing this series about faith in real life. He has designed it so that you and I grow in our faith together. And in the process, show the world what he can do. This is not optional. And when we do it well, a watching world looks at us and they find something they're longing for too, where they're really connected, where there's a community that has some substance to it, where there's real friendship, where there's belonging. Today, if you're watching any TV today, watch the commercials. And you'll see what you and I long for. I mean, there are going to be beer companies that say, you drink our beer, and you're going to have beautiful friends. Tons of them. They're going to smell good. They're going to look good. They're going to want to be with you. Now, once they're drunk, they're going to forget you. But before that, there'll be commercials for clothing. If you wear these clothes, everyone wants to be your friend. And we buy it because we want friends. We want to be connected. If you get this car, whatever it is, they're selling us stuff so that we'll be able to fulfill this sense of being part of a community or belonging, because it's built into us. We all want to have real friendships. But I want you to notice something else in this. Jesus said, a new command I'm giving to you. Do you know why you give people commands? Because if you didn't, you wouldn't be dealing with what comes naturally, which is the opposite of what the command's telling you to do. The command is there because it's trying to intercept the ways we fall short of what God wants us to do. So the command is to love each other because our natural inclination is to love ourselves and distance ourselves from people that are around us. Loving each other is not automatic. To build real community where there are loving and genuine relationships, it requires time together. It requires things like worshiping together. It requires serving together. It requires having meals together. It requires us spending time together to get to know each other. And when we do, one of the things we'll discover is we don't always get along. Relationships get messy because of people like you and me. We don't want to hear that. I want to say relationships are messy because of those people. Well, all of us are those people. We've got our strengths, but we also have our weaknesses. We have our things we're great at and things we're horrible at. We have things that we can see, things we're blind to. Our differences collide the closer we get to each other. And then the work begins. We're made up, the Jesus Church is made up, you know, Sarah just mentioned this, we've been adopted into his family. We have all different kind of backgrounds, we have different ages, life stages, we have different nationalities, different races that were part of education, political views, and maturity levels. Yet we're to be a community. There's going to be conflict, and we need to learn to deal with it. How we handle the messes in these relationships really matters. And it has a huge impact on the quality of our faith. In fact, I would say, if you want a metric for how genuine and strong your faith in Jesus is right now, I think what we could do is measure it by the quality of the relationships that we have. And are we following through on this command to love each other? So I'm going to shift for a minute. I'm going to share with you in just a second my favorite verse in the Bible about relationships. Now, Becky and I talked about it this week because I wasn't sure, and she wasn't real sure either, but did I convince you later? Now, you'll never see this verse on a coffee cup, t-shirt, or bumper sticker. I doubt if any of you will have a poster at home with this verse on it, but I'm going to tell you, if you'll stick with me, this is maybe the most powerful verse on relationships that I know of as far as practicality in the Bible. Here it is, Proverbs 14:4. Where no oxen are, the manger is clean, but much increase comes by the strength of the ox. Do you feel it? Let me read it one more time. I want you to get this. Where no oxen are, the manger is clean. But much increase comes by the strength of the ox. I don't need to teach you anymore. I think we can close in prayer. Hang with me for a minute. Let's show this first picture. That is a stall where farm animals will keep. Now, I've done research, and I couldn't find a lot of research on oxen, but let's just put it this way. I'm going to go with ox and horse because they were the original tractors. And that's what the whole point of it is. In this first picture, someone has a farm, and they have a stall that is neat and clean. It's tidy. It's comfortable. It's quiet. There's no mess at all. Do you know what you call that? A non-working farm. There's nothing going to be accomplished there because it's neat, clean, tidy, and it's useless. Without an ox or a horse, very little's going to be accomplished in a significant farm. You might get a tiny little garden, but you're not going to really live out the potential of whatever acreage you have. If you're going to live out to that potential, you're going to have an ox or a horse. There's no other way around it. I mean, this has been going on forever. If your goal in life is to have no messes. And I'm telling you, don't make any friendships. Don't have kids. Don't get married. Don't work anywhere where you're not the boss and sole employee. Don't have any customers. And live off in the mountains somewhere. And even then, squirrels and birds and stuff like that can create problems. But we're talking about humans here at this point. For our application, this verse, this is unacceptable. Because we've been called to be part of a community, not isolated, but vitally connected with each other. And it's only in this connection with each other where we're going to develop the kind of faith God wants us to have and where we're going to discover what it really takes to live full lives. You'll never live up to your God-given potential if you stay isolated from relationships with others. The problem is, though, when you are connected to others, there's going to be disappointment and hurt and all kind of things that happen because messes happen in real life. So some of you are thinking, that is very appealing to me. That's what I want. God does not want that for you and me. So understand this. You can pursue that, but you will not be living out of faith, a faith the way God intended. Now let's look at picture number two. This is a little different. Let me read the verse again. Where there are no oxen, the manger is clean. But much increase and apparently destruction comes by the strength of the ox. It's obvious there's been an ox or a horse close by. Now, my guess is in the early days when the farmer got the ox or the horse, things were going great because he goes, man, look how much I can get done. Look how much I can plow. Look how much I can haul. Look what I can accomplish when I've got this. I'm just going to use horse because you're going to see this in a minute. Wow, I had no idea. Real excited, but then there's some ongoing attention needed. The horse doesn't understand about what the limitations are. Things get broken, things get destroyed, other things happen. There's a need for repairing and cleaning constantly. I'm going to give you a little bit of data. I'm not trying to gross anybody out, but this is an article published from the Penn State Extension Department. It's called, I'm not making this up, Horse Stable Manure Management. You can look it up. It's a real people wrote this article. Here's some things I learned from it. The average horse, full mature horse, produces every day 65 pounds of poop and pee. And it ruins the bedding that it has. So 65 pounds of stuff builds up every day. Now, everyone here is thinking, I don't really want a horse. I think I'm going to pass on that. It sounded really good till he said that. Ugh. It's important for all that stuff to be removed. If you let it pile up, kind of what happened, well, leave that picture. We'll come back to that one in a minute. You're going to have insects. You're going to have rodents. You're going to have disease. You're going to have parasites. You're going to have all kind of problems if you don't deal with the mess. Handling it, you're not going to see many pictures on the internet of people that are having fun dealing with it. They're not smiling. Oh, man, another 65 pounds. But they understand it's necessary if you're going to have health. It's part of the deal. Analogy for us is we're going to have stuff to deal with each other. You know, I've been a huge disappointment to everybody on staff. Most of them have disappointed me at different times, too, so we're even. Becky and I have been married a long time, and we have mutually disappointed each other multiple times in that period of time. And it's not the whole thing, but learning to deal with that and wrestle with it and come find out what do we do with it is important, and it helps build strong relationships. When I don't deal with it, when we ignore it or avoid it, this is what we get. We get, not that, go back to that other picture, that. And some of you, you can look at the wreckage of the relationships you've had. And it's because things haven't been dealt with the way they should have been. They were ignored, avoided, whatever. So here's picture number three. And what this is, you'll notice that the 65 pounds has been moved out of the stable. It still exists, but they're just not living within it. Someone has gone in with a pitchfork or shovel or whatever they've done, and they've done the dirty work that needed to be done to create health and an environment that is good so that the work can continue in a good way. Some of you that grew up on farms, you know exactly what this is about. Messes need to be regularly addressed and dealt with well. This week I was reading this book called Reconcile. It's really, really a fascinating book. And in it, the author says there are three styles that people have in dealing with relational conflicts. On the one side, you have people that they fear and they hate conflict. They hate it so much, they're never going to deal with it. They pretend it's not there. They run away from it. They avoid it. They might become passive-aggressive, but they're more concerned about the look of a relationship than really making it healthy. And so they stay over. And some of you are that way. You cannot stand any kind of conflict. And you'll fake it. You'll pretend. Sometimes you just run away. The relationship or the picture of it is more important than anything else. On the other side are people that can't wait to see a conflict. In fact, they'll create them because this is how they thrive. And they can't, their goal in a conflict is to win. You're having a discussion, and what they're doing is listening to you, not to understand, but to gather data to use against you when you take a breath. And there, some of us grew up in environments where conflict was constantly being stirred up. Arguments, overbearing kind of opinions thrown out. And the issue is much more important than the relationship. On this side, the relationship's more important than any issue. On this side, relationships, they can come and go, but the issue, I'm going to win this. And then the healthy is somewhere in the middle. Recognizing conflicts happen, not avoiding them, not trying to create them, but when they're there, using it to the absolute best of the ability to try to elucidate whatever the issue is, but at the same time, continue to work on building relationship. It's not an either or. You know, we live in a broken world. We are broken people. We need to understand it. We need to deal with it. So here's your assignment. And if when you're leaving here or if you're watching online, you can download the take-home sheet. I want you to get a copy of the take-home sheet because it's going to help you deal with it. I want you to think right now. Think about a relationship you have that's a mess. If they're sitting next to you, no elbowing, just quietly know it's a mess. And some of you are thinking, well, I don't have any messy relationships. Well, stay tuned. But you do know people around you that do. And I want you to think about someone, if it's not a relationship you're in, and I think if you really do think about it, you'll probably come up with it. Brian and I had one today. Isn't that right, Brian? That's right. I was coming in here and Brian knocks me down. That may not be, I'm going to have to clear that up later. I think I maybe knocked Brian down. But anyway, stuff happens like this. If you can't think of one, think of someone you know, coworker, it could be a family member, someone you know that has a relationship that's really not going well. And I want you to think about it. And I want you to see how God uses relational messes in our lives. How he wants to use the problems that come up to do something really good. So God uses these relational messages, and along the way our faith is going to grow. One is to challenge us. You know, we can get really, really comfortable with our lives. Some of us are comfortable, and what we do is we never engage anything that could have the slightest bit of controversy to it. And we think, oh, I'm wonderful. I'm great. Not really. There may be things that if you don't bring it up, there could be a disaster about to happen. I'm not talking about meddling in other people's lives. I'm just talking about in our relationship, there are times when we need to speak up. We need to step out of our comfort zone. And the issue is, do I really love others? Or do I mostly just love my comfort and convenience? Basically, I love myself, and I don't really love others around me enough to be involved. You know, Jesus said in Matthew 5, he said, blessed are the peacemakers. And I'm not trying to be clever here. He doesn't say, blessed are the peace fakers, the people that pretend everything's okay, or the peace breakers, which has become very common in our culture. He said, blessed are the peacemakers, the ones that get involved and try to broker peace, try to bring reconciliation. We have two sayings that we try to live by here at New Hope. One is that believe the best and inspect the rest. That means I'm going to believe the best in others. But if something becomes a pattern or I can't get through it, then I'm willing to go to them privately and us talk about it. I'm going to inspect it. It may be something I've done wrong. It may be, maybe there's nothing wrong, but I don't want to just pretend everything's okay. I want to know. And the other is the one who knows goes. You know, some of us are aware of problems in relationships, but we're waiting until someone else gets it and comes to us because, quite honestly, I deserve that. No, you don't. Jesus' command is for us to love others as he loved us. He pursued us. There's a challenge when these messes come up and a challenge to look and see, God, what do you want me to do? Another thing is these messes can really bring us to a point of being humble. Relationship messes reveal a lot about me. My expectations, my assumptions, my demands on others. And a mess comes up, and all of a sudden, if I'm honest and I really look inside, I've got some work to do. Am I just going to blame everybody else, or am I willing to look inside and say, God, is there something here going on with me that you want me to look at? It's real easy to blame others, to find them as an excuse. But that's not helpful, is it? It may be that others have made a big part of the problem. That's okay. But that shouldn't be my default go-to. And allow me to blame them or ghost them or whatever I do. One thing that we like to do is we like to gather a crowd of people around us and tell them, wow, did you see how they treated me? Huh. And we find people that agree with us. It could be social media, it could be a network or whatever. And instead of really addressing the problem, what we've done is we've just gathered our own little group to support us. Don't join those groups. Be really careful. Don't take up an offense for someone else when you don't know what's going on. Relationship messes also teach us. They help us to learn, if nothing else, just how to love well. And I want to say our churches should be a place where we grow and learn together. Right now there's a kind of a mindset in our culture, and I think it's infected our churches. I think this is where we've been conditioned by our culture, that we should only hang around people that agree with us on everything. You know, the shame of that is it doesn't give anybody room to grow and mature and develop. I've had a lot of my opinions change because some of you have helped me see something from an angle I missed before. I haven't changed everything I believe. There's some things I believed and I hold tight to them. And I believe not because I'm being stubborn, but because it's been confirmed over and over again. But our churches ought to be a place where we can grow and learn and where people can move along together. If we've always, always got to agree on everything, what does that say? We need to recognize, too, that when these relational messes happen, it's an opportunity for us to develop patience, understanding, finding out where someone else is coming from, learning to forgive. If we resist to work through problems, we're doomed to continue them. The church ought to be a place where, as a community, we're willing to grow and learn and to do it together. It's also, these relational messes are an opportunity for us to be corrected. Some of us have blind spots. All of us do. And this problem happens, and if I'm willing to explore it well, what happens is I might just learn something. You know, Jesus, again, gave us some more direction. He goes, make sure that you take the log out of your eye before you start taking specks out of other people's eyes. What we do is we think, I might have a little speck, but they got huge logs. It's an arrogant kind of mindset that is not humble, not teachable, and not open to correction. And God, some of the messes you and I have, there's a pattern to them. I had a friend years ago, and we were talking, and he said, oh, women, they're horrible. They're terrible. There's not a good one around. He had had like 5 or 6 or 7 relationships, and it had all fallen apart. And I looked at him and said, John, what's the common denominator in all these relationships? Women. No, John, it's you. But he didn't want to see it. He was looking for log surgery in everybody else and unwilling to look in his own life. All of us do that. We've been conditioned by our culture to defend ourselves at any cost. Shame on us when we do it. And a watching world looks at us and they say, can you not learn anything? Do you not have any compassion? Why would I want to be a part of that group? We like to gossip, we like to vent, we like to blast, but that doesn't help us grow at all. There's a banner when you walk out of here and get a drink after the service. There, we have these banners in our atrium, and one of them says, do reconcile. It means it's on me to do everything I can to try to help relationships grow and develop and be healthy. When we follow Jesus, that is what we've been commanded to do, is to do everything we can to build strong, healthy relationships. Does it mean that if I do my part, every relationship I have is going to be A+? No. Does not mean that at all. There are going to be times when a relationship does not reconcile. But you don't you decide that up front. You and I are to do everything we can to bring healing and hope and help. Because we answer not to our culture and not to our little social group. We answer to the one that we say we follow. To our staff and leaders here at New Hope, we've got work to do in modeling the way of reconciling and working through messes and not avoiding them and not inviting them, but making the most of them when they happen. Parents, do you know generations have perpetuated anger and hatred and bitterness and unforgiveness because it hasn't been modeled? Work at it. Show your kids, however old they are, how this reconciling works. How to use the potential in a mess and not just give up, not just walk away, but to actually deal with it. Many of us, where we work or in our school or in other places, there are broken relationships. We can do something that could give hope and help and possibly healing if we follow what God calls us to do. Romans 12 says this, never pay back evil with more evil. Do things in such a way that everyone can see that you are honorable. And that doesn't just mean everyone that agrees with you. But when your life and your choices are examined, they would say, you know, that person took the high road. Do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. Don't let evil conquer you, but conquer evil by doing good. We've got homework to do. Let's pray. God, you know all the messes that are represented here. You know, some of us are just scrambling and struggling. And some of us have learned how to cut and run. We bail when things get hard. There are others of us that just can't wait for a good fight. And we love taking people down. We love winning. But what you've called us to do is to be stall cleaners. You've called us to be people that don't avoid or create messes, but when they happen, that we roll our sleeves up and we get involved and we work through to understand and to help, to cooperate with you in bringing hope. I pray that today and this week that each of us will take a a good hard look at our lives and the relationships that we have. And the ones that are a mess that we will ask you and we will look to take steps toward trying to bring reconciliation. And we would help people around us that are struggling and offer them a listening ear, but also some wise advice to encourage and challenge them to take steps in the right direction too. May we as your church be a model for a watching world on how to build real community. In Christ's name, amen.